The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network. I'm not afraid to take a stand.
Welcome to Z Live, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on this beautiful afternoon here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I'm with you today, but not quite so live, but just delighted to be with you today. And obviously, we won't be taking any calls at all today, but I do have some things that I want to share with you. Some very important things about the reason for government, what we should expect from government, and how we should expect those things from government, so that we have, I believe, better expectations, clearer understanding, and are able with that to participate more fully and more productively and more responsibly in the process of government. And so I'm really, really excited about talking about this today. And it's a lot of important things, quite frankly, that we have to be aware of. And so I hope you truly zoom in and come to appreciate what it is I'm taking up today. So we just had an election. It is not the first in our country's history. And in the course of that election, we would have changed government again, not the first that we would have done in the course of our history. We have done this several times now since 1992. We have done it several times. Of course, we've done it before when we changed from a quote UBP government to a PLP government and had that administration in place for about 25 years. And then that administration was unelected and replaced by an Ingram administration. So the 25-year one was a Pendling administration, a PLP administration, which was replaced by an Ingram administration, an FNM administration, which was then replaced by a Christie administration one term later, which then was replaced by an Ingram administration one term later, which then was replaced by a Christie administration, a PLP administration one term later, which was then replaced by a Minnis administration, FNM administration, or one term later, and then was itself replaced by now a Davis administration one term later. And so we've seen changes in government. But what are all of these administrations? What is the government supposed to do? And it's important for us to be able to distinguish between an administration and the government. While we say the government has changed, we understand that means that the administration responsible for the direction and control of the government has changed. But the government itself which constitutes the body of elected officials, appointed officials, the civil service, and all of the instruments and entities and agencies of state, that is not as an institution changing. The institution remains the same. The holders of office in those institutions may change, particularly the ones who are elected and the ones who are appointed by those elected and those who may retire from time to time or resign from time to time or may have suffered demise from time to time or may have been ill from time to time. They can change, but the offices don't change. There remains a governor general's office. There remains a prime minister's office. There remains a cabinet office. There remains a office of senator. There remains an office or offices of members of parliament. There remains offices of the judiciary, including the heads of the judiciary. There remains offices of permanent secretaries and deputy permanent secretaries and directors and deputy directors and all the way down the line, those offices that together fill up the institutions of the state that collectively represents the institution of government, that does not change. Only people who occupy those offices change. And so the administrations, that is, the parties who by law come to be elected to those offices, they change. And we have had that happen several times. But what I first of all want to do is zoom in on the purpose of government, the purpose of government. Why do all of those ministries, why do all of those departments, why do all of those units, why do all of those agencies, why do all those public corporations, why do they exist, and why do all the people who are hired by the government in all of those entities exist? For what purpose is their government? That's what I want to zoom in on first. So, as a state, that a legally, internationally recognized collective of peoples and institutions formalized around a defined territory and a set of rules and laws with a people with a shared history and culture and polity and ethnicity and as a formal state, we have embraced the notion that in order to have a lawful and orderly existence as a group of people, we need to have a government in place. And what is it that this government is supposed to do for us? This government is supposed to generate enduring public value. Enduring public value. Not just public value, but enduring public value. Meaning value that lasts over time. That is robust, that is resilient, that we can expect predictably as time goes on. Value that we can enjoy, that our children can enjoy, that our children's children can enjoy, so long as the state persists, and so long as the heaven and earth persist, we can enjoy this public value. But what is this public value? And that's a very important question. It is public value versus private value, right? Because a private value is a benefit, a utility, an enjoyment that I can experience at the exclusion of you experiencing it. Okay, so I take a meal and I eat it. That is a private value for me. That's a private benefit. That's a private enjoyment. I can exclude you from the enjoyment of that, or I can share it with you. It's entirely up to me. Entirely up to me. That's a private enjoyment. I can take my music and in my own home and I can play my own music. It's a private enjoyment. I can exclude you from that entirely. It's up to me. Mind you, I can raise the volume of the music and share it with others, but I don't have to. It's a private affair. My private education, I can pay for that and I can enjoy that to the exclusion of anyone else. It's my own. It's private. It's my private business. I can include you in its shareholdings or I cannot include you. It's entirely private. Public value, public goods and services are not like that. So for instance, a public value, a public good cannot be, you cannot exclude someone from that. They may choose not to enjoy it, they may choose not to engage it, but you can't exclude a legitimate member of the public from it. For instance, the government creates a public park. I don't have to go on the park in my neighborhood if the government made it. I don't have to go. But no one can say I can't go unless the government, for some security, for some safety, some health, or other legitimate reason that is not unconstitutional, says I can't go. Is as long as it is a public good or a public service, I can have access to it and I cannot be lawfully excluded from it because it's a public good. It's a public service. Okay? Roads. The government can't say, nobody can say, I can't ride on the road. I may choose not to ride on the public road, but no one can exclude me from doing so, so long as I am not in breach of any law. I can have access to that road. This is the nature of public value. It is intended for the collective public. It is intended for all the people. Okay? And so there is no such thing as my road when it's a public road. It's not your road. It's our collective road. Again, not my road, our collective road. It's not my park because it was paid for with, in quote, my tax money. It's our park. It's paid for with our money. So the Bahamian in Long Island or Nagua has as much right to the public park in Nassau or Freeport or Grand Bahama as does any single person in Nassau or Grand Bahama. Because why? It's our park paid for with our funds. The Bahamian in Auckland or Crooked Island or Andros has as much access to a primary school in Nassau or a primary school in Mayaguana as anybody else because it is our schools, pay for with our tax money. And so public value, public goods, public services are for the public. Not you privately, my friend, not me privately, for the Bahamian public. And what are those, what is that public value that the government is supposed to be generating? Those are efforts the government makes. Those are outcomes the government seek to produce that meet the basic needs and aspirations of the public. Notice the word basic needs and aspiration. Food, shelter, safety, health, education. Basic, not your higher order needs and aspirations that, you know, human beings can come to have, but those things that are basic needs and aspirations to our collective existence as a people. We need to be in a peaceful environment, so we need security, we need safety. We need to have access to food, because if we don't, we'll starve, we die, we don't have a population, there's no nation, there is no state. So we need to be able to access food, basic food. We need shelter, because if we're exposed to the elements, that could be detrimental to our health and detrimental to our well-being, and we could die. If we die, no people, no nation. So the government's the enduring public value are those things that the government attempts to do, those outcomes that the government seeks to produce that meet the basic needs and aspirations of you, me, the public, not your private situation. You and I benefit privately from public goods only to the extent that in accessing them, we can share in the utility for our private selves. But they are not produced as exclusive benefits to you and you alone, me and me alone. That is not public. That is private. And so what is the government seeking to do? What is the government's responsibility? It is to create, to produce enduring public value. That enduring public value those efforts and outcomes made by the government that meet our basic needs and aspirations. That is what the government is supposed to do. If you're wondering why Mr. Davis and his team and all that they are now responsible for is supposed to be doing for you, what Dr. Minnis and his team and all that they were responsible for in government were supposed to be doing for you and every other administration prior, it is to create enduring public value. Everybody say enduring public value. Parents, guardians, if you're trying to help your children understand the role and function of government, you tell them, you share with them that your government is supposed to be generating, producing for you enduring public value. And they might ask you, what is that enduring public value? Well, we as a people have needs. We also have aspirations. We need safety. We need health. We need education. We need a shelter. We aspire to be a developed country. We aspire to be a prosperous people. We aspire to be a united people. We aspire to have cultural expressions that bring us pride as a nation. And your government, their efforts and the things that they produce are supposed to help meet these needs and further these aspirations of ours. That's the role of your government. And let me be clear with you. While the government may help you get a job, you personally. That's not the role of the government. What the role of the government is, insofar as a job for you is concerned, is to create and generate the kind of public value, the kind of outcomes that can further your opportunity to get a job. That's the government's role. While the government may create programs and outcomes that can help you get a house, get in a house, the government's job is to not to make sure you get a house or get shelter. That's not the government's job. Okay? It's to create outcomes, an environment in which you stand a good chance of doing these things. Because the government is not to meet your private need and your private aspirations. It is to meet the public, our collective needs and our collective aspirations, and only to the extent that our private needs and aspirations can be fulfilled within the outcomes of what the government seeks to do for all of us as a grouping, do the two come together. But to be sure, to be angry at the government because it doesn't meet my private need or something I want exclusively for myself, when in fact it is meeting the public need, something that is good for all of us, is to have misplaced anger. And so, again, the role of government and an effective government is producing enduring public value, which reflects outcomes and efforts that meet basic needs and aspirations of the public. Okay? So that is the first thing I want to say to you today. We're going to take a break. You're listening to Z Live. We got lots more to share. We'll be back after this break.
Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Sheila, you okay? I see smoke coming from your window.
Chad, Johnny Moe's burning down the house frying chicken.
Your kitchen is a mess. You have insurance?
If I have insurance, I pulled my phone out, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and in no time, I was on live chat with RSA rep, sent pics of the damage, filed my claim on the spot.
Wow, I don't think my insurance got that kind of...
You got to go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
Have you taken a look at those investment options yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids at school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails, and that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
Have you heard about the COVID vaccine raffle? If you are vaccinated against COVID-19, you can enter to win amazing prizes like food store gift certificates, hotel stays, beach excursions, and so much more. Even if you are previously vaccinated, you can still enter to win. The COVID vaccine is free, safe, and protects you from severe COVID-19 infections. Don't delay. Get vaccinated today and enter to win. Visit www.vaxbahamas.com to register.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Throughout our lifetime, we must all make decisions. No matter how we choose, the right one just needs to be made. Like having J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers as your insurance partner. We've been serving the Bahamas for over 100 years. Whether you need home, motor, marine, or commercial insurance, make the right decision. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com.
J.S. Johnson Insurance. Loss of family members is very isolating, and people who have experienced loss appreciate when others have shared their grief. If you can't be there in person, go to the Nassau Guardian's website online at thenassauguardian.com and visit our obituary link. The Nassau Guardian's interactive obituary link allows you to read the funeral announcement, express condolences, or place photos on the online guestbook for one full year. Losing a loved one is painful, but that pain isn't the worst thing to happen. Friends, loved ones, colleagues, and neighbors who ignore the loss compound the pain. Should the bereaved family wish to place the obituary and photos on our obituary site, just contact the Guardian's funeral industry partners or the Nassau Guardian. Remember, there isn't one magic right thing to say to someone experiencing loss that will make the loss less painful or easier to bear. The Nassau Guardian's obituary link, available online at thenassauguardian.com.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back to Z Live, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful afternoon. No, we're not live today, but I am live with you with a brand new show pre-recorded for you today to share some thoughts to you on what it is you should expect from your government. What is it that the government should be doing for you, notwithstanding maybe all of the promises that get made, what are the fundamentals of what we should expect from the government? Now, so I mentioned that the government's role, the government's job, is to produce enduring public value, and that this enduring public value is about the government's effort and the outcomes those efforts produce that meet the basic needs and aspirations of the public. Now, the question then is, how does the government produce, generate this enduring public value? How does it do that? Well, it does so through what we call public policy. Public policy. You've heard the word. You've heard policies. The government's policy is. The government's policy is not. What do we mean by that? Because that is ultimately what generates value for you. You remember I told you that in previous shows, I don't get caught up in people's personalities, because you know you can be a wonderful personality but have no or poor public policy ideas or outcomes, remember? I'm not overly concerned about how friendly you are or are not, even though, you know, it's always good to be friendly. I'm not overly concerned about, some of the things that we tend to get caught up in about our political leadership that really have nothing to do with generating public value. But what matters is public policy. What is the government's effort and government's results when it comes to generating the kinds of benefits that meet the needs of the Bahamian public and the aspirations of the Bahamian public? That's public policy. Okay? Whatever the government does or does not do in response to the issues, concerns, needs, and aspirations of the Bahamian public is public policy. And the policy itself is about delivering to the public actual services and achieving actual social outcomes and being able to maintain trust and legitimacy. Okay, so what is public policy? It's the government delivering to you, to the public, to all of us, services. Health services, safety services, environmental services, education services, social services, these kinds of things. Delivering those actual services, why? Because they're trying to meet basic needs and aspirations. Also, achieving social outcomes, employment, health, education, unification or unity, peace, cultural expression. These are social outcomes. So you deliver the services, you achieve by delivering those services, social outcomes, and in the process, importantly, you maintain trust and legitimacy, meaning that people have confidence in what you say and what you do as being in their interest. They are confident that their government is both acting in their interest and acting aright and lawfully in their interest. That keeps the legitimacy, see? So it's one thing to be confident, because you could be confident in somebody who's doing crooked things because the crooked things are benefiting you. But if you're doing things that are against the law, you're not doing things legitimately. And so you lose your legitimacy. So you want the government not merely to deliver your services and then produce outcomes for you, but you want in the process for the government to maintain trust. For it. Let me give you an example, right? The government could get you a bridge. It could get you a dock. It could get you a school. It could get you a clinic. And those things will and can benefit you. But if the government does it in a way where it skewed the process so that it could give it to one of its favorite souls in a way that cost you more money than it should have cost you and did not deliver the quality service that it ought to have delivered to you, then the government has just demonstrated and does not want to let you know that it did so and tries to hide that from you. So the government has just participated in something that is ethically irresponsible, is wasteful to you, is not cost effective. And if you find out that it was seeking to hide all of this from you, then now you lose confidence in the government. And that is going to diminish, therefore, the viability of the government. And if it has broken any law in the process, it will lose legitimacy. We don't want the government to do that. So you want to say to your government ministers, you want to say to Prime Minister Davis, you want to say to the cabinet ministers, members of parliament and senators, and all who come after, that your expectation is deliver me services. Yes, thank you very much. Make sure these services actually achieve outcomes for us. Not deliver me services, sorry. Deliver us services. You know, you ever noticed when Jesus was teaching his disciples to pray, he said, "Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name." He said, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." Listen to what he said next. "Give us this day." Why not give me this day? He said, "Give us." You know why? Because he was invoking the collective community of God's people as beneficiaries of the government of God. And so similarly, we're saying to our government, deliver us actual services and achieve for us actual social outcomes and maintain our trust and legitimacy in our sight. Because you can't just have legitimacy and trust from the PLPs or from the FNM or from the DNA. You have to have, or the COI, you have to have legitimacy if you're government from all of your people to the extent that the reasonable people will have that trust and confidence and legitimacy because your behavior warrants it. So it would be a mistake to just have FNMs happy with the government or PLPs happy with the government. You want to have your people, reasonable people, happy with the government. And how do you do that? Deliver actual services, deliver those services in a productive, results-oriented way, and in the process, do what you must do to maintain trust and legitimacy. How do you do that? Well, first of all, act within the law. After all, the law was passed by the parliament, right? So act within the law. And if you don't like the law, go back to parliament and change the law so that now you can act within the law, right? And then it could be debated before the parliament and the people could see the debate and see what you're changing and so forth. But that's the first thing. Act lawfully. You want legitimacy? Act lawfully. How did you get elected? Legitimately? Within the law. Act lawfully. That's the first thing. The second thing is act ethically, meaning have some core values and principles that guide and direct your behavior and your conduct. Have some rules about what represents fairness, what represents honesty, what represents integrity, what represents fidelity, what represents good value. And operate within these values and encourage, promote, facilitate others within your sphere of influence to operate within those values. So act within the law and then act ethically. See, because the law gives you a minimum standard of ethical practice or rules, right? Your own core ethical principles and values give you a higher set that says, you know, beyond the fact of the law. See, the law says thou shalt not kill. My ethical guide says treat the other person with respect. The law doesn't require me to treat you with respect. The law just says don't kill you, don't steal from you, right? But my ethical standard says beyond the law, not only will I not kill you, but I will actually treat you in a friendly manner. I will treat you in a manner befitting a child of God. That's an ethical standard. I'll not be dishonest with you about something you are asking me about. So that's different. So you want to be lawful and you want to be ethical. And then you want to be prudent, right? And prudent says, I'm trying to get an outcome that is efficient. That means it's timely. Effective means that it actually makes a positive impact. And that is lasting. Lasting. It will last. So that's prudence. So I have a long game. Right? So the Bible says a prudent wife is from the Lord. What does that mean? It means that somebody who is able to see the long game and act in ways that can ensure enduring value for their family, right? Similarly for the man, you got to be prudent, you got to be wise. And so you want to be lawful, ethical, and prudent. If you are guided in government by those set of values, then you are going to produce public policy outcomes that deliver actual services, achieve social outcomes, and maintain trust and legitimacy if you're able to do and prepared to do those things. Now, let's be clear. Let's be real. There are political considerations that can work against that because the primary interest always is enduring public value. That's the primary interest. The secondary interest is staying elected, staying in power, being elected, being in power, helping yourself advance in public life, helping your family and your friends, nobody can dismiss that those are going to be in your head and in your heart. It would be unnatural for a human being not to seek out his or her own interests. It would be unnatural for a human being not to have the interests of their family members or friends at heart, not to have the interests of those who are their allies at heart. It would be unnatural. And I understand and know all the talk and stuff that we talk, but it's unnatural for people not to look out for their interests. Even you listening to me right now today, you are always, you're on your job, you're looking out for your interest. Even though you say you're looking out for the company's interest, you're looking for your own interest. Because 99.9% of you wouldn't stay on that job if they didn't pay you. You wouldn't just do the job because, man, I just think it's a great thing to do. If they didn't pay you, you wouldn't stay there, right? Why? Because you have your interest at heart. Though the thing is on the job, you said, yeah, my interest is to get paid, but on this job, my primary interest is to do what the company requires in order for the company to succeed. Similarly, in government, you're going to have your own private interest, personal interest. You're going to have the interest of family members and friends, but they cannot supersede. They cannot be above. They cannot be superior to the public interest. And so whenever the two of those conflict, whenever your interest and the public interest conflicts, the public interest has to win. Whenever your family members' interest and the public interest conflict, the public interest has to win. Whenever your friends and the public interest conflict, the public interest has to win. Whenever your supporters' interest and the public interest conflict, the public interest has to win. But let's be naive. The existence of those conflicts is why we have ethical standards. Ethical standards would be unnecessary if we didn't have conflicts of interest. They would not be necessary. That's why we have to solve the ethical dilemma, because there is and will always be opportunities for conflicts of interest. Police have them. A police officer is someone who enforces the law. Sometimes the lawbreaker is the police officer's family member or friend. The police officer can't deny, I love my family member. I love my friend. And I don't want to have to charge my family member or my friend. But it isn't, you can't blame the police officer for that feeling. He or she is a human being. But they now have a conflict of interest. And in pursuance of their duties, they have to put the public interest above their private interest. That's all that's required. Or they may even have to disclose it. They may have to disclose to their superior, listen, that's my family member. This is a good friend of mine. I'm finding it very difficult in the circumstance to deal with this matter. Please put somebody else on this. Okay? That's why disclosures exist. Because it acknowledges that there can be conflicts of interest, and that in disclosing, one is able to then make decisions that can resolve the conflict. Now, in resolving the conflict doesn't mean everybody walks away happy. Because resolving the conflict, especially in a public matter, means resolving it in the public interest. And when you resolve it in the public interest, the public wins, the other person loses. And that's not going to make them happy, but it is going to be the right outcome for the public. And so these things are going to happen, but if you want to deliver actual services to the people and do it in ways that produce results, positive results for them, and at the same time maintain trust and legitimacy, then you want to act lawfully, ethically, and prudently, recognizing your own internal struggles sometimes with all that you have to do. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shavar Balang, your host. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we will continue our discussion on what we should expect from our government. We'll be back after this break.
Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
Loss of family members is very isolating, and people who have experienced loss appreciate when others have shared their grief. If you can't be there in person, go to the Nassau Guardian's website online at thenassauguardian.com and visit our obituary link. The Nassau Guardian's interactive obituary link allows you to read the funeral announcement, express condolences, or place photos on the online guestbook for one full year. Losing a loved one is painful, but that pain isn't the worst thing to happen. Friends, loved ones, colleagues, and neighbors who ignore the loss compound the pain. Should the bereaved family wish to place the obituary and photos on our obituary site, just contact the Guardian's funeral industry partners or the Nassau Guardian. Remember, there isn't one magic right thing to say to someone experiencing loss that will make the loss less painful or easier to bear. The Nassau Guardian's obituary link, available online at thenassauguardian.com.
It's Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful, beautiful afternoon. I trust you are doing well. We pre-recorded today, so there are no calls today. I'm not taking any texts today, but we're wanting to share with you some information that can help you better understand what the role is of the government and how and what you should expect from the government and how the government should deliver those expectations to you. So we've gotten into the role of the government, which is to create enduring public value. We've talked about what that public value is. It's meeting the public's basic needs and aspirations. We talked about how the government does this through public policy, and that public policy is the government's efforts and outcomes in delivering actual services to the public and producing social outcomes through those services and maintaining in the process trust and legitimacy. Now, let me tell you something, and I'm going to take this thought into the news break because it is really important. Listen. Public policy often, very often, addresses the things in a society that are too hard to do for others. Let me say it again. Public policy, as researchers observe, often addresses the things in the society that are too hard to do. So by the time it gets the government, the things that the government is taking up are among the hardest things in the society to do. For instance, who else in our society wants to take on the job of keeping the nation safe from outside threats and inside threats? Who's taking that job on? How easy is that? Keeping the nation safe from outside threats and inside threats. Meaning you have to have the means to interdict. First of all, you have to have the means to detect. Let me start it again. So protecting the nation from outside threats means that you have to first be able to detect an outside threat. Secondly, to identify that threat as a threat. Then to mobilize in order to contradict the threat. That requires all kinds of manpower, instrumentation, vehicles, etc., 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 etc. And you have got to be able to do this effectively. Who else is doing that, taking that job on? No one. Now, inside threats, that's criminals, terrorists, and the like, you have got to be able to detect that, to identify it, and then to mount an appropriate response to it. Who's taking that job on in a society? No one other than the government, right? Who is taking on and wants to take on the responsibility of manning your prison? Who? Nobody. Who wants to take on the job of educating all the poor people in the country? Notice I said all the poor people, because private entities don't mind educating the rich people because they can get paid and make profits from that. They don't mind doing that. But the many poor children in the country, the thousands and thousands, who can take that job on? Because there ain't no money to be gotten from it. So nobody wants to do it. Therefore, the government does it. Who is going to take on the job of paving all the roads used by the public in the country? Not a private entity. They don't mind paving the roads as a contract. But paying to have the roads installed and maintaining them, they're not going to do that because they're not going to collect any money for doing so, other than having paved the road itself as a contract. No, they're not going to do that. Who's gonna take on the role, the job, of feeding all your poor people in times of distress? You have some charities that do it, but do you see many wealthy, well-funded entities rushing to go there and say, oh, yes, you know, in the pandemic, we're going to feed these people. It's not a problem. No, government does. So by the time a job gets to the government, it is really a hard job. It's a challenging thing to do. The work of government is challenging, and there is no wonder that around the world, it is mostly done by government. Now, when the private sector gets involved through, for instance, public-private partnerships, the private part of it is getting a profit from it. And that's the only reason why many instances are doing it. You do have some instances in which charitable organizations partner with the government to do things, that's for sure. But by and large, when you see the private sector involved with anything having to do with the government, meeting a public need, the private sector is making a profit from it, and the government is simply doing what only the government would be prepared to do. All right? And so I don't begrudge the private sector for that, by the way. The private sector is a private entity. They are in the for-profit business. That for-profit motive has created a great deal of innovation and progress and advancement, but it has its limits, because if that profit isn't there, then they are not going to offer the product or service, and the product and service may in fact be needed by the society. And so therefore, the government has to step in and provide it in order to ensure that it gets it. Now, where we get in trouble here is where the government starts to get confused about what it should do and what it should not be doing. Because sometimes in a kind of power grab, in a kind of politically motivated sense, the government starts to do more and more and more things. And what happens is it becomes inefficient at those things and ineffective at those things, because it shouldn't and was never the best entity to do those things to begin with. And this is one of the reasons why there has to be studied means of determining what is fit and right for the government to do, and what is fit and right for the private sector to do. And that has to come by studied means, by researching what, where and when are either the most effective. And then we can sort that out. And I think if we did that, we'll probably find that the government will continue to do the hardest, hard things that no one else probably but the government can do, while other things the government does lands in the private sector where it can be done better and more effectively. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're going to take a break for news, and when we come back, we will continue talking about what to expect from your government. We'll be back after this break.
Take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm. Let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Babe, you mashed the car?
I mashed the car. The lady run into me, marsh the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull out the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today, or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
Summer is heating up, and Burger King Nassau is bringing the flavor. Introducing our all-new take on a classic chicken sandwich, the Barbecue Swiss Crispy King. Our new sandwich is full of smoky and tangy flavor and features our crispy chicken patty with tangy chipotle sauce, onion rings, bacon, Swiss cheese, lettuce, and tomato, plus a smoky barbecue sauce on a soft potato bun. The new Barbecue Swiss Crispy King chicken sandwich with fries and a Pepsi is a summer treat you will love to eat, but only available for a limited time and only at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm. Let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on what is a Tuesday. I kept saying Wednesday. Yeah, I just came from my son's graduation in Halifax, and I could tell you, you know, I celebrated my daughter's birthday on Sunday, and so I'm a little bit maybe overly excited and rushing things along. Let me just say, Zaria Lang, my beautiful daughter, only daughter, turned 20 on Sunday. My son Jamal, as I indicated to you before, graduated with his bachelor's from St. Mary's University on Saturday. So I had a double whammy celebration over this weekend, and really was wonderful to be with them and to spend some time with them as they both celebrated these milestones in their lives. So it's Tuesday, folks. It's Tuesday, not Wednesday. Please forgive me. It's Tuesday. And we have been talking about what we should expect from government, not just this administration, but from government, period. And that expectation is that enduring public value we should be expecting. That enduring public value means every effort of the government to meet the needs and aspirations of the people of the country, not us individually and personally. That's not the aim. It's what, as a collective, we require to be able to live a quiet and peaceable life. And so when our government is able to deliver those things to us, then we are in good shape. And they do that through public policy. And that public policy is the government's response and effort to deliver services to us that are required, and to produce social outcomes from delivery of those services, and in the process to maintain trust and legitimacy so that we are continuously able to believe in what it is that they are doing. We indicated that the things that the government is called upon to do, things that the government tends to take up to do, are the hardest things to do. educating your people, not just your people, but really the poor people in the country, because others who are able to afford to buy education from private enterprises, they are able to do that. But lots of people cannot afford to do that. And so the government has to do so, providing health facilities for people, especially poor people, because some people are able to buy that health service, those health services from the private sector. But lots of people cannot afford to do so. And so these are hard things to do. They cost money, they require expertise, they require coordination, they are required and oftentimes to be delivered in places where it's difficult to deliver them, like in our family islands that don't have a large populations that can sustain good revenue for the government to pay for services and these kinds of things. And so the things that the government is called upon to do are often very difficult things to do. And who is it that is responsible for doing these things? Well, there are two sets of players. There are your elected and appointed officials. So these are your public policy directorate, right? So those are your politicians. Those are the ones that set the direction for the public policy. They're the ones who get to determine, and it is their job to determine what is done, when it is done, and with what resources it is done. Right? They can, this is the cabinet, for instance, of the Bahamas, right? Their responsibility is direction and control of the government. That's the constitutional responsibility. If you want a different kind of situation, you got to change your constitution, because the constitution gives that direction and that control to the cabinet, the executive of the country. So they make the decisions about public goods and services, what goods and services are delivered, when they are delivered, how they are delivered, why they are delivered. They make those determinations, right? That's your policy directorate. That's the cabinet ministers, the cabinet as a whole. That is their responsibility to make those determinations. Even when they delegate that responsibility to, say, a group, maybe say a private sector grouping, it doesn't matter. Ultimately, they are merely delegating a responsibility that is theirs to them. And that doesn't mean that those groupings can delegate and can do that without any reference to the government. That's not true. As long as the public treasury is being used to pay for a service, the executive is responsible ultimately to the parliament for the use of those funds. And so therefore, a private sector grouping can't just decide to do anything it wishes without regard for public policy, without regard for the public policy measures that the government has set in place. And if the government decides that a private entity, a private grouping that it has delegated a responsibility to do something is not acting in the public interest, is not consistent with their public policy, they can fire that grouping. And ain't nothing they can do about it. Right? Unless there are some lawful parameters that define the tenure and or the manner and means by which any such grouping can be dismissed, the government is free to do as is consistent with the law that gives it the authority to exercise direction and control over the government. That's the reality of it. So you have your public policy directors, but then you also have those who execute public policy, and those are your public officers. Those are your civil servants and all of them. So these civil servants, from the permanent secretary, from the cabinet secretary, the cabinet, to all the permanent secretaries and all along the line down to the clerks and custodians and all of those, their responsibility is to execute on the public policy that has been set up. And so all the commissioner, police and his officers, and all the chief justice and their staff, all of them, all the public corporations, so to collectively represent the means by which public policy is executed and therefore delivers to you, supposedly, those goods and those services that meet your basic needs and aspirations and therefore generates that enduring public value. Okay? You want to get some examples of enduring public value? Now, you can dispute it as to the consistency and quality, but the generation supply of electricity, water, sanitation services, roads, docks, airports, seaports. These are all values that we have in the society that you can see over time. The police force, the defense force, how long have they been around? Do they really do anything? Of course they do. Would you want to be in a society without them? No, you don't. But you can actually see whether or not these things deliver value. You know, you could complain about the quality, the efficiency, and the effectiveness of the value, but here's what you can't complain about. Let's take all the police and send them home. There's no more police in the Bahamas. Who wants to live in that country? I know I don't. All right, let's get rid of the defense force. Do you want to live in that country? You might want to, but it ain't gonna be the same in some ways, especially in terms of your, you know, of the safety of your waters, right? Let's move all the roads. Just dig them up. Dig up all the roads. Since you think they're all so bad and terrible, let's dig them up. What kind of society do we end up with in that regard? Let's get rid of all the schools. Since you think they're just deproducing schools. Okay, they're just deproducing schools, so they're not good, they're no good. Let's just close them all down. Let's shut them down. What do we end up with? Okay, I think you'll agree we'll be worse off. We may not be as good off as we'd like to be, but we certainly would be worse off without the schools, right? How about the hospital? Yes, it's got challenges, right? We know that. The clinics, they got challenges, but let's get rid of them. Let's just close them all down. Would we be better off as a society? We would not be. And so it's easy to see public value when you get rid of the things the public service provides. Even though you want to see better value, it is indisputable that there is value and that that value is enduring and it's supplied by your public policy directors and your civil servants in combination over these many years. I don't know that anybody should thank the politicians who have been in government over the years. I don't know that anybody wants to do that. I don't know if anybody wants to thank civil servants who have been paid to do a job over many years. I don't know if you want to thank them. So that's up to you. But I really do have to acknowledge that you all have certainly provided, added, created enduring value for the Bahamian public. That is, for my mind, an indisputable fact, right? No gratitude extended, just an acknowledgement of what is in fact the fact, right? Now, and so it is in these persons and in these people that this public policy is delivered. And now, what becomes necessary is for the public policy to be effectively carried out, designed, produced, and executed. It's good leadership. Effective leadership. Robust leadership is necessary in order for us to get the value we want, desire, require out of the government. And this is a leadership that has to be provided in this instance now by the Prime Minister, Prime Minister Brave Davis, who delivered his first speech before the United Nations only recently, just the other day, and did a good job at it in delivering his message to the United Nations, trying to stress the need for a globally coordinated response to the pandemic and to take into consideration the peculiar circumstances of small island states, what have you. But he and his very large cabinet, now, Prime Minister Davis, you and your colleagues in times past levied harsh criticism on Hubert Alexander Ingram for having a very large cabinet, you said, when the cabinet was about 17 persons or so. You were harsh in saying how it was a Gussie May cabinet, too large and costing the taxpayers too much money in consideration of the fiscal and economic and debt challenges the country had. So let's not be short sighted about our historical perspective on these things. Now, the Progressive Liberal Party, inclusive of now Prime Minister Davis, were extremely harsh. I remember being a part of it. I remember the criticism levied on us by the government, by the opposition then, when Mr. Ingram, in seeking to embrace younger persons to introduce them to government, he had a number of ministers of state. He had maybe 17, 18 members in his cabinet, and the Bahamas' fiscal and economic circumstances were certainly nothing like what they are today. Not even close. Not even remotely close. And they were harsh in their criticism. I remembered hearing it from practically every sitting member of the cabinet today who used to be in the opposition back then. Every one of them, especially the more senior ones of them, Gussie May cabinet. I felt a kind of way about it, actually, my own self, because, you know, you felt self-conscious about it. And now, Prime Minister Davis appoints it amongst about a 27-member cabinet. 27-member cabinet. 22 cabinet ministers. Right? 22 cabinet ministers and 7. 20 cabinet ministers and 7 parliamentary secretaries. 27-member cabinet. I don't know. I haven't done the calculation on that one. But let me see if I can do a rough calculation. So you got 20 members of cabinet, 20 cabinet ministers times cabinet that times $66,000 roughly. That's $1.3 million. And then you have 7 parliamentary secretaries at about $45,000. That's not inclusive of their parliamentary parliamentary salaries. So you're looking at roughly $1.6 million annually for the cabinet. So over the 10 years, it might cost you almost $10 million. And then guess what? As a percentage of the government's expenditure, that is really immaterial. As a percentage of the government's expenditure, that's less than 0.6%. That's less than 1% of the government's overall expenditure. So on a material financial basis, that's not a lot. But that's not the point. Point is, why is a large cabinet today justifiable when before a smaller cabinet but bigger than was accustomed to was deemed a Gussie May cabinet? That's the point. And this is what we do. This is what we do. We do in our politics, right? Where you stand depends upon where you sit. It's okay now. It's not okay then. Can't let you get away with that, bro. It's a huge cabinet. Can't let you get away with it. I'm not begrudging you, but hey, you had different views about it at some time ago. But the government that we require to deliver these public policies that generate public value, enduring public value, is now relying on the leadership of Prime Minister Davis and his team. And that leadership has got to now provide for the government vision. So presumably it will take on board what it has said in its manifest, in its plan, and the national development plan, which it says it will embrace. It will provide that as a guidepost to what it is seeking to do. It will provide focus to the government, meaning it will take that broad vision and break it down into parts and assign and various parts of it to execute those goals and objectives that help to advance the vision. He now and this team has to be the communicators to ourselves as a public and to the civil servants as an executing group. And to be able to listen to and also to commune and speak with them and us so that we can understand the vision, understand the focus, and may input into what might be an evolving set of circumstances. They now have to provide the strategy and planning. Okay, you didn't put the plan out there in words, but in like you put the outcomes you seek to have in words, but the strategy and the planning now is about the detailed resources and coordination and collaboration and cooperation necessary to get the thing actually done. They have the responsibility now to make decisions. Some of them are not going to be popular. Some of them are going to be fairly unpopular, like appointing a large cabinet is not a popular decision, but you made it, right? There are other decisions to be made. What is to be done with the pandemic and the pandemic response? What is to be done about the economy and trying to get that to be robust enough to provide jobs and better income for folk and to stabilize the government's finances? Decisions have to be made around that. Decisions have to be made around infrastructural needs of the country. Decision has to be made around social assistance needs of the country. Decisions have to be made around taxation. So decisions have to be made around international relations. Decisions have to be made around leadership in the country in various spheres. And just lots of decisions that have to be made by the leadership of Mr. Davis, Prime Minister, and his team. In the execution of their leadership, they have to reflect honesty. And honesty is sometimes recognizing when even your own effort may not have been appropriate or may not have been the best, etc. So there has to be honesty. There has to be trustworthiness, right? There has to be the ability of people to have confidence that what you say, you mean, and what you do means well. And not only means well, it's done well. And not only is done well, it's done right, properly. There has to be problem solving also. And so we have to get this leadership from the Prime Minister and his team. But the Prime Minister and his team have to also understand that leadership has to partner with another set of leadership in the execution of the governance of the country. That partnership has to be with the leadership of the civil service. Now Let me say it again. There are many of you who have never worked in the government before. I'm talking about you. Not only have you never worked as a parliamentary secretary, you've not worked as a cabinet minister, you've not even worked in the government before. So you don't know that system well. You don't know, may not know the nuances of it, etc. You don't know. Well, there is a leadership of that system. It's been in place for a long time. Many of the people in that leadership have been in the civil service for a long time. For instance, you don't just come into being a permanent secretary, a deputy permanent secretary, or first assistant secretary willy-nilly. That's not typical. It may happen, but it's not typical. These people have years of experience in the service, in working in the service. They understand the service. They understand its rules and so forth and so forth. And these days, we have a strange reality in the Bahamas. And it's in plenty of places, but in the Bahamas, strange reality, okay? When we fly, we want an experienced pilot. When we go to the hospital to get surgery, we want an experienced surgeon. When we go to get our children educated, we want an experienced teacher. When we go get our houses wired up, we want an experienced electrician. When we have to get our plumbing done, we want an experienced plumber. And we want our companies that we work for to recognize and acknowledge our experience in paying us. We say that to them. I've been here for 10, 15 years. I know this stuff. I should be paid for my experience. But in government, for some strange reason, experience actually works against you. You've been there too long. Time for you to move on. All of a sudden, in government, apparently, now only young blood will do. We need fresh blood. We need younger people. And this is in keeping with a philosophy that we also see where younger people graduate university, pop up to a workplace with their degree and say, you have to pay me for my degree. Really? Really? Yes, I should take into consideration your degree as having given you some advanced knowledge about this subject area. But have you ever worked here before? Have you ever done a lick of any engineering here before? No, you're not? You mean not like Sam who's been here for 10, 20 years? You've not done any of that? Oh, you mean like Sam who has to train you in the technical operation of this business so that you can be able to do it effectively and bring some of your knowledge to bear on that? You mean I have to pay you better than him, her? Really? Than Sandra? Really? It's a kind of strange thing. But I know that experience matters everywhere, including in government. There's no question that young Sir Lyndon Oscar Pendling was not as capable in government as a more mature Sir Lyndon Oscar Pendling who had come to better understand government, that Hubert Ingraham had an advantage in coming to be prime minister, because unlike Sir Lyndon Pendling, who had not even served in a cabinet before he became prime minister, Hubert Alexander Ingraham had been in a cabinet before he became prime minister, and that served him well. Right? Now, everybody don't serve well because it's not just your experience that matters. So that's why sometimes people get taken aback by people who've been in a place a long time. Listen, time spent and experience are not the same thing. Time spent and experience are not the same thing. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break, I'm going to explain a little more fully what I mean by that. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shavar Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break. Welcome back. Tuesday afternoon here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I trust and hope that you are doing well. Yes, this is a pre-recorded show, and we're talking about our expectations of government. And before we took the break, I was saying, listen, that we have a strange notion in the Bahamas these days where when you are in politics, like if you've been around long, that's a plus, that's a minus. Like it works against you. Whereas in almost every other area of life, we want an experience to somebody. We want people who've been around for a while, who've been flying, doing surgery, doctoring, lawyering, etc. But not in politics. We want fresh blood. Never been around before. Bring the fresh blood. I don't have an issue with fresh blood. I don't have an issue with old blood. I just have an issue with competent blood. And that's why I was saying before we left that time spent on a job and experience aren't the same thing. It is normally the case that if you spend time on a job, you come to have experience that makes you more capable in the job. But that isn't necessarily the case. Because some people spend time but are never immersed in actually the work in the way that brings them enhanced skills. Because experience really means to immerse oneself in a task, in a work. It is the immersion in the work. It's being flooded with the waters of the knowledge and skills of that work that comes to bring such familiarity that you are able to do that work efficiently and effectively. So if somebody's just lazy and mediocre and not prepared to really, really get in there and understand the work and absorb and soak up the work and develop over time their skills, that doesn't mean that their experience brings them any expertise. And so you see that some people who have been in government before may come to government and really not as effective because they didn't immerse themselves in the work of government. They were just there, enjoying the post and the power, but not necessarily appreciating the environment and what that environment calls for and developing their skills so that they could perform in that environment. So you've seen that. So it is true that a younger person can come in and do an effective job at something. So that is true, but it's not automatic. It is also true that an older person can have been in a job for a long time and not do as capable of job at it. That is also true. What is necessary is for people to be evaluated in their own spheres, but not to be, we shouldn't be canceling people because they are young. We shouldn't be canceling people because they are old or older. We should be evaluating people's ability based on their ability and the circumstances that call for that ability. That's what we should be doing, right? So the civil servants who have been there, who are immersed and have been immersed in the civil service and the work of the civil service, they are there as advisors to policy directors, Mr. Parliamentary Secretary, Madam Parliamentary Secretary, Mr. Cabinet Minister, Madam Cabinet Minister, Prime Minister. As you know, Prime Minister, these civil servants, professional civil servants, these permanent and pensionable servants of the government are there as advisors. They are there to say, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, this can be done, but within these parameters. No, sir, no, ma'am, this cannot be done without this having to be done. And so forth and so forth. That's the job. That is what their responsibility is. And you would do well, each of you, if you want to participate in the generation of this enduring public value, if you want to be effective participants in public policy and administration, you want to take heed. Now, you're not going to always agree. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. You could disagree with a civil servant. I don't agree with that. But hear them out, though, because maybe what you are disagreeing with is that something should be done, but they are telling you why it cannot in the circumstances be done. Maybe it's a lack of resources. Maybe it's a lack of approval. Maybe it's a legal impediment. whatever it, maybe it's a technical glitch, whatever it is, what you are listening for is, okay, that's the problem, here's how we resolve it. So you wanna, you can say to them, okay, how do we resolve it? How do we get this impediment out the way so that we can deliver this public value to the people of the country? Don't get your egos involved. Don't get your personal, egoic, power, interest involved. Because in the end, you ain't going to win the power struggle, not the war at least. You could win a battle, but you're not going to win the war. Why? Because when you get unelected, they will be right there for the next people, set of folk who come in. That's why they're called permanent secretaries. They are under permanent and pensionable establishment. You are not. You are not. You are elected on a 5-year term. And if the governor, if the prime minister sees fit, it may be shorter. Right? So listen to them. They're part of your leadership structure now. And together, you have to generate this enduring value for the public. It is a partnership. It is a collaboration. It is a coordination. It is a cooperation. And both have to work together. Civil servants, you should know this, but in case you don't. Your professional posture requires you to pay no attention to the politics of the people who come into elected office. They have been elected by the people of the country. Their legitimacy to office is in that the returning officer has complied with the command of the Her Majesty the Queen through the Governor General to have a polling of persons to be representatives in the House of Assembly, and having had such done, to call from amongst them the leader of the party with the most members elected to the House of Assembly to become Prime Minister and form the government. So their power and legitimacy comes from the people of this country for whom you work. Let's be straight now. Let's be clear. If you are a permanent secretary, if you are a deputy permanent secretary, you are FAS, SAS, or AS, or any other position in the civil service, any director, any deputy director, or any other officer in the service, you work for the people of this country, not for me personally, not for any individual person. You work for the collective people of this country. That's reality. They pay your salaries. And they have sent to be the policy directorate in the country the people who have been elected, Prime Minister Davis and the people he appointed. They have sent them. They have given them authority to be there. So regardless of your politics, regardless of your preferences, regardless of your likes or dislikes for any single person that they may have appointed, yours is a simple duty, which is to help facilitate the execution of the public policy measures that they seek to put in place. That's the job. That's the role. In pursuance of enduring public value is to facilitate, to give guidance to give direction to, and to actually carry out with effectiveness and efficiency those things that they seek to have done on behalf of the people of this country that they promise to do or they come up with in the course of time. That's the job. And so we need you to be professional and we need them to be professional. We really do. And might I add to both of you, both sides of the divide, or both sides of the equation, might I add that your mistakes in this very difficult and troubling environment are going to be magnified many times over because we have so little room for error. Your disputes unresolved, your nitpickings, your wafflings, your inability to get on the same page will have such magnanimous impacts on our situation that in some instances, if we're not careful, we may not be able to recover from those errors, or it will take us such a long time, far too many people will be hurt and damaged by it, and the country itself hurt and damaged by it. So we don't need it. We need you to get on the same page as much as possible, work as closely together as possible, as cooperatively together as possible, and just keep in focus. And we're doing this for the people of the country. We're doing this to generate public, enduring public value. We're doing this to generate enduring public value. Nothing else, nothing more. Whatever the other things are, that's okay. We work through it. We're doing this to generate enduring public value. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're going to take our final break. And when we come back, we'll wrap up our discussion on what to expect from the government of the Bahamas. We'll be back after this break.
Everybody.
Have you taken a look at those investment options yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids at school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails, and that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, for these remaining moments of the show. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here on this Tuesday afternoon, where we have been talking about what to expect from the government of the country, and run through, I hope, a number of issues that brought you some clarification, brought you some better awareness of what we should and can expect. That enduring public value ultimately is what we seek from the government. And we were talking just before the break about the fact that that has to be delivered by the leadership of the country, now vested in Prime Minister Brave Davis and his team. It's a very large team. It's a big team. You expect a lot from a big team. You create a big team. Got to deliver now. Make people forget you're a big team. Otherwise, they'll keep complaining. And so we expect that the focus would be on enduring public value. Now, you know, we've elected the government. And when I say we, I mean the collective we. So not everybody voted for the Progressive Liberal Party. In fact, thousands and thousands did not go out to vote at all. And I have no doubt that there are other people who, even if they went to vote, they may not have actually cast a vote, right? They may have put in a ballot, but they may not have cast a vote. But so not everybody did. But legitimately, the administration in place is the administration of our country. So there's no denying that. And so we now, as a people, have got to not sit on the sidelines and not participate in the process. And how do we do that? Well, first of all, you have to stay keen observers of what is happening, right? So stay aware. So you want to listen to the news, you want to read the newspapers, you want to listen for announcements and these kinds of, you want to observe the happenings because you want to know what your government is doing or not doing. You want to observe. And where you see positive things happening, you want to celebrate those and commend those, and so that you encourage people to do more of that. So, you know what I mean? You want to be able to do that. And where you see negative things going on or things with which you do not agree, you want to speak up or write up or call up. Firstly, don't just call the newspaper, the talk shows, write the newspaper. You don't have to start there. How about you start with, bro, you're my member of parliament. I just noticed the government doing this, that, and the next thing. Are you in agreement with that? Seriously? How do you justify that? Why was that happening? Why is that happening? Why was that done? Can you explain that to me? Is there something you can send in writing to help me understand that? Please? Thank you, sir. Ma'am, I'm calling you as my member of parliament to find out, did you all pass that law and why? Why did you think it was okay to do that? Blah, 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 blah. So that puts them directly on notice. Oh my goodness, wow, they're calling and listen to me. If a member of parliament gets a call from more than 20 people about an issue, you better believe that they are on notice. If they get a call from more than 20, 40, 50 people, they are shaking in their boots, especially people who they highly regard as influential. It doesn't mean you have to occupy some big post or the other, but you can. So if you're a pastor or a business person or a leader, civil society leader, or someone in a community that's well known to people, they start shaking in their boots. They start thinking, wait, back this ship up now. We got to figure out what's going on because people are calling, people are talking. Now, I know sometimes the political people take these things personally. They get personally angry with you and they think that you're against them and against you. No, I'm for the country and I want to get something positive done. So all you have to do is get on board if you and I can both agree that there's a better way to do this or this is not going to be the way to do it. And then once you've done that, I'm done. I'm finished. I don't have to be here trying to criticize you or that, because all I'm trying to do is tell you, we think it's wrong-headed. We don't think it's the right way. And as citizens of the country, we have a right to do that. So that kind of active, so if imagine if we have the combination of effective leadership from the policy directors, effective leadership from the civil service, and then effective advocacy from the society at large, we then have a combination of active governance that is more likely to produce results for us than not. And this is what we strive for. We want that genuine, enduring value for the Commonwealth of the Bahamas and its people, so that we can live in a peaceful, orderly, prosperous, productive, developing, progressing country. And that's the aim. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today. I trust and hope that you have a wonderful evening. Nahaja Black is up next. God bless you. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.